Europe prepares to take the lead on Ukrainian security.
Zelensky is a war leader whose country has been invaded. Yeah. And we should all be supporting him. Yeah. And not fawning over Putin.
The biggest outbreak of measles the U.S. has seen in years.
Highly, highly infectious. Probably one of the most infectious viruses we know. And that disease is absolutely preventable by vaccination.
And the future of the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas is in doubt.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says the move to cut aid is intended to force Hamas into continuing the current ceasefire deal as proposed by U.S. President Donald Trump's Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff.
Today is Tuesday, March 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Steve Karish. Our top story today takes us to Europe. Britain said on Monday that several proposals had been made for a truce in fighting between Ukraine and Russia after France floated a plan for a one-month pause leading to peace talks. But U.S. President Donald Trump suggested his patience was running out. Alex Cohen of Reuters has more.
Well, we're going to make deals with everybody to get this war, including Europe and European nations.
U.S. President Donald Trump said on Monday that he is committed to reaching a deal to end the war between Russia and Ukraine. He would just like to receive more thanks from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky for the role the U.S. continues to play in the conflict.
Well, I just think he should be more appreciative because this country has stuck with them through thick and thin. We've given them much more than Europe, and Europe should have given more than us because, as you know, that's right there. That's the border.
Earlier, Britain said several proposals had been made for a truce in fighting after France floated a plan for a one-month pause leading to peace talks. European countries are rallying around Zelensky and trying to hatch a peace plan that includes Ukraine after last week's Oval Office rupture between Zelensky and Trump.
You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having
cards. Playing cards.
Right now, you don't have your playing cards.
The two sides had been expected to sign a deal to give the U.S. access to Ukrainian minerals, but Zelensky left without signing it. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer told Parliament the prospective minerals deal is not enough to act as a security guarantee that would ensure Russia sticks to the terms on any peace deal.
The mineral deal is not enough. Zelensky is a war leader whose country has been invaded. And we should all be supporting him and not fawning over Putin.
On social media, Zelensky said his country had to engage in substantive diplomacy to bring to a rapid end the three-year war with Russia, and he hoped to be able to rely on U.S. support in securing peace. Friedrich Merz, the conservative due to become Germany's chancellor after winning the largest share of the vote in an election a week ago, suggested Friday's Oval Office argument in which Zelensky was pressed to commit publicly to a diplomatic solution had been a pre-planned trap.
It was not a spontaneous reaction to interventions by Zelensky, but obviously a manufactured escalation.
Russia has not concealed its delight, praising Trump for changing U.S. policy and denouncing Zelensky for challenging him.
That's Alex Cohen of Reuters reporting for us. In a related development, the White House announced late Monday that the U.S. will be pausing military aid to Ukraine following President Trump's Oval Office argument with Ukrainian President Zelensky. Turning now to the conflict in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Congolese soldiers are standing trial for a variety of crimes, ranging from desertion to violence against civilians. Their trials have painted a grim picture of an underpaid and under-equipped army. Lucy Fielder of Reuters has more.
Congolese soldiers crowd into a chapel to stand trial for crimes including rape and murder allegedly committed as they fled a lightning rebel advance. Testimony during the court-martial proceedings have highlighted the dysfunction of an army hobbled by poor pay and corruption. The chaos of the past few weeks as Congo loses ever more territory in the east to Rwanda-backed M23 fighters has further strained the army's weak chain of command, exposing civilians to more risk of abuse, according to a confidential UN memo providing an update on the fighting. Military prosecutors pursued charges including theft, pillage, extortion and loss of war weapons at the trials in Muzienene last week and in the South Kivu provincial capital Bukavu earlier in February. Most of the accused acknowledged that some soldiers committed such crimes, but denied they were involved, insisting they were separated from their units, like soldier Siko Mongombo Brees, accused of desertion.
We were trying to find our unit, and when we got to Kimbulu, we settled in the street. That's where we were apprehended. We explained that we were looking for our unit, and it was on our way back that we were arrested. That's the end of the story. We didn't steal. We didn't do anything wrong. We are innocent.
Testimony collected from quick-fire trials of more than 300 soldiers, interviews with three senior army officers, and a confidential UN memo seen by Reuters paint a grim picture. While President Felix Tshisekedi's government has touted efforts to recruit new soldiers and acquire new weapons, the senior officers said this has meant little for underpaid and under-equipped soldiers on the front lines. The trials have yielded death sentences for more than 260 soldiers. The army spokesperson for the Northern Front, Lieutenant Colonel Mac Hazuke, said the accused soldiers have, quote, dishonored the army and committed atrocities that could spur the population to aid the rebels' advance. The M23 rebels are backed by thousands of Rwandan troops, according to UN experts. Their superior weaponry and equipment creates a stark battlefield imbalance, officers said. Josephat Musamba is a Paris-based conflict researcher.
L'ennemi, appuyé par le Rwanda.
The enemy, supported by Rwanda, has burned the surveillance system and pinpointed their positions with precision. This has led to the loss of many commanders, among other consequences. That is the first issue.
Des commandants et ainsi de suite. Ça, c'est une des premières. La deuxième, c'est que...
The second issue is a lack of trust within the units. This distrust can be explained by the fact that some commanders who were deployed sometimes hesitate or refuse to fight, believing they have been betrayed or sold out. The third issue is that they see which way the wind is blowing.
Rwanda denies providing arms and troops to M23. Tshisekedi has blamed military higher-ups for the poor performance, telling supporters the army had been betrayed from within. But his critics blame him for leaning heavily on regional forces and mercenaries, while incorporating militias who have proved difficult to control.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters reporting. Now, in the western part of the U.S. state of Texas, approximately 145 people have the measles. It's the largest outbreak of the highly contagious disease in many years. At the same time, authorities in several parts of the U.S. are also battling an outbreak of the bird flu. How can the public stay safe amid these outbreaks, and how can we stop them from spreading? I'm joined by Dr. Yvonne Maldonado of Stanford University Medical School.
Well, they're two very different diseases. Measles and the flu are two different kinds of viruses, but they what they have in common is that they can be spread by a respiratory route. So we know that the influenza can be spread by respiratory secretions. And now we know that there's a particular kind of bird flu that has been infecting cows that can be spread presumably from milk or the udders of cows to humans. Fortunately, there hasn't been human-to-human spread of that particular strain. Now, measles is a different virus, highly, highly infectious, probably one of the most infectious viruses we know. And that disease is absolutely preventable by vaccination. And what we're seeing in West Texas and New Mexico is an outbreak that occurred primarily among a highly under-vaccinated community where there was probably a measles case that came in from outside the U.S. and is now spreading among people who aren't vaccinated in that community.
So in either case, bird flu or the measles, are we looking at another situation like COVID-19 where it might become a truly worldwide pandemic?
Measles is already a disease that is spread all over the world. There are millions of cases of measles every year around the world. It has not been completely controlled. We have the capacity, if we vaccinated enough people in the world, to actually eliminate measles from the world. But we haven't gotten there yet because not everybody has been vaccinated. It is already all over the world, but we have been fortunate since 2000. The United States has not had locally transmitted cases of measles because of the high vaccination rates. But because of the lower vaccination rates we've been seeing over the last few years, we are starting to see small outbreaks. And there is the risk that we could see more cases. But I would say that if we keep our vaccination rates high, by that I mean over 90 to 95% of children are vaccinated, that we could avoid that in the U.S. and we could actually reduce the number of cases around the world. In the 1990s, about 1 million children in the world died from measles every year. And now that number is about 150 to 160,000. So we reduced the death rate by tenfold because of vaccination, but it's not gone.
So is the situation in West Texas a particularly large outbreak in global terms?
Well, it's a large outbreak in the U.S. because we haven't had an outbreak this big for a long time. So this is a big outbreak. It's probably the third biggest outbreak in the last, say, 10 years. And it could get bigger. But fortunately, what we're seeing is there's a lot of vaccinated communities around this particular outbreak. So most of that we are hoping that there won't be more transmission.
Typically, what role does the government play in mitigating outbreaks like measles and bird flu and other infectious diseases?
Yeah, so the government actually, in terms of public health, plays a very strong role. So there's public-private alliances. The government, in form of public health communities, also provide vaccinations and healthcare infrastructure for people who might not have private providers, but also provide the overall infrastructure for your local, county, state, and federal organizations. So we have a whole governmental arm to keeping our U.S. population healthy, and that still continues to function.
For folks who might be listening outside of the U.S. and may not have access to some of what you've just been speaking about, what are the kinds of things that they should look for either in themselves or their children to see if they might be infected by one of these diseases? What are the symptoms?
Yeah, so when you talk about the flu, it is harder to get flu vaccines outside the U.S. And we know that flu is very common in all parts of the world. And flu is basically like not just a cold. It's a very severe respiratory infection with high fever and really trouble breathing and extreme fatigue, and can also manifest with gastrointestinal symptoms. And so in those cases, I think those symptoms would warrant having the person be seen by a physician. And for measles, every single country in the world, every single region in the world should have public health access to measles vaccine. And it's really important that everybody who has children makes sure that their kids have received their measles vaccine. And right now, the World Health Organization recommends at least two doses of measles vaccine, or just two doses, and that should provide really high-level protection for children. And it's a pretty simple thing to do.
Dr. Yvonne Maldonado of Stanford University School of Medicine. Dr. Maldonado, thanks for your time. Thanks for your help with this.
Yeah, thank you.
And here are some stories we're following from around the world. The Vatican says that Pope Francis has suffered two new episodes of acute respiratory crises and has been put back on non-invasive mechanical ventilation. It was another setback in what has become a more than two-week battle to overcome a complex respiratory infection and pneumonia. The Vatican said that Francis remained alert and oriented, and that he cooperated with medical personnel. The prognosis remains guarded. U.S. President Donald Trump said on Monday that there was no chance for Mexico and Canada to avoid 25% tariffs from taking effect on Tuesday, sending financial markets reeling on the prospect of new economic barriers in North America. Trump also said reciprocal tariffs would take effect on April 2nd on countries that impose duties on American products. U.S. stock indices extended their losses after Trump's comments. CEOs and economists say the action, covering more than $900 billion worth of annual U.S. imports from its southern and northern neighbors, would deal a serious setback to the highly integrated North American economy. China is ramping up cooperation with Pakistan in space exploration. The China Manned Space Agency announced that it will train Pakistan's first astronaut for a mission aboard the Chinese space station. The agreement comes just weeks after the two sides announced China's moon lander mission in 2028, will carry a Pakistani rover. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Karish. Turning now to American domestic politics, Muslim Americans in the state of Illinois began the holy month of Ramadan as a guilty verdict was announced in the trial of a man accused of murdering a 6-year-old Palestinian-American boy. VOA's Kane Farbaugh has more.
As friends and family members gathered for Friday prayers outside the Will County Courthouse, jurors inside deliberated less than 90 minutes in a murder trial that shook the Illinois Muslim American community. 73-year-old Joseph Suba was found guilty on all charges, including murder and hate crimes, for fatally stabbing 6-year-old Palestinian-American Wadi Al-Fayoumi and wounding his mother, Hanan Shaheen.
I don't know if I should be pleased or upset, if I should be crying or laughing.
The young victim's father, Odai Al-Fayoumi, spoke to reporters after the verdict.
I'm the father of the child, and I've lost the child, and I feel like this decision came a little too late.
No verdict is going to bring their son back.
Amina Barhoumi is with the nonprofit Muslim Civic Coalition, which helped draft the Wadi resolution that passed in the U.S. Senate in September. The measure recognizes Wadi's death as a hate crime for his Palestinian Muslim identity. The murder took place 1 week after the October 7, 2023 Hamas attack in Israel that killed more than 1,200 people. Hamas, a U.S.-designated terror group, also took hundreds of others hostage. The Wadi resolution affirms that the United States has zero tolerance for hate crimes, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, anti-Palestinian, and anti-Arab discrimination. Again, Amina Barhoumi.
It's a moment to grieve Wadia, but it's a moment to also ask, what are we doing to ensure that Wadia is the last?
That is what Joseph Juba yelled as he stabbed at them. Muslims must die.
Ahmed Rahab, who led the Friday prayers outside the courthouse and translated for Odai Al-Fayoumi, is the executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations Chicago office.
This is one of the worst hate crimes that have been committed in recent memory that targeted an innocent 6-year-old boy, a kindergartner, and his mother. The boy was stabbed 26 times, as you've heard repeatedly. You can imagine the brutality of the scene. It was very difficult for the parents to have to live through the details, the gruesome details, so our heart goes out to them.
Illinois has one of the country's largest Muslim American populations. The largest concentration of Palestinians live in Cook County, especially the Chicago neighborhood of Bridgeview, also known as Little Palestine. Again, Ahmed Rahab.
All of us who are parents, who are Arab, who are Palestinian, I happen to be Egyptian American, who are Muslim, we all saw our children die in Wadi Al-Fayoumi. Because this could have been any one of our boys.
Rahab says plans are underway to construct a permanent memorial to Wadi at a children's park in his hometown, the Chicago suburb of Plainfield. Joseph Suba's sentencing is scheduled for May 2nd. Kane Farbaugh, VOA News, Joliet, Illinois.
The Senate voted 51-45 on Monday to confirm former wrestling executive Linda McMahon as the nation's education secretary. It's a role that places her atop a department that President Donald Trump has vilified and vowed to dismantle. McMahon will face the competing tasks of winding down the education department while also escalating efforts to achieve Trump's agenda. Trump has signed sweeping orders to rid America's school of diversity programs and accommodations for transgender students while also calling for expanded school choice programs. McMahon, a billionaire and former CEO of World Wrestling Entertainment, spent 1 year on Connecticut State Board of Education and is a longtime trustee at Sacred Heart University, but otherwise has little traditional education leadership experience. The future of the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas is in doubt after Israel cut off all aid to the Gaza Strip. Israel says it wants to extend the current ceasefire for 7 weeks. Hamas says it wants talks on a permanent end to the war. VOA's Linda Gradstein has the story from Jerusalem.
Israel's announcement that it is blocking humanitarian aid from entering Gaza through its checkpoints has caused fear and panic buying in Gaza's markets. The move comes as the Muslim holy month of Ramadan begins, when Muslims fast from dawn to dusk and share festive meals in the evenings. This year's Ramadan is taking place amid massive destruction caused by 16 months of heavy fighting between Israel and the terrorist-designated Hamas. Mai Al-Khodri is a former school principal who was displaced from her home in Gaza.
The closure of the crossing has a negative impact on us as displaced people who have returned to Gaza City. It's the month of Ramadan and we are in need of many things. My house was bombed and destroyed. I have nothing and there is nothing in Gaza. Everything is expensive and not available.
Israel says there should still be enough food in Gaza to last for months. The humanitarian aid cutoff comes as negotiations on the second stage of the ceasefire hostage release deal between Israel and Hamas have faltered. Hamas seized 250 hostages in an October 7, 2023 terror attack on southern Israel, sparking a war that has left tens of thousands of Palestinians and more than 1,700 Israelis dead. So far, 147 hostages have been returned to Israel alive, most in two ceasefire deals with Hamas. Israel has also released some 2,000 Palestinian prisoners. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says the move to cut aid is intended to force Hamas into continuing the current ceasefire deal, as proposed by U.S. President Donald Trump's Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff.
Israel has decided to stop letting goods and supplies into Gaza, something we've done for the past 42 days. We've done that because Hamas steals the supplies and prevents the people of Gaza from getting them. It uses these supplies to finance its terror machine, which is aimed directly at Israel and our civilians.
Many Israelis have voiced support for the prime minister's hardline policy, but many of the families of the remaining 63 hostages are afraid that the suspension of aid to Gaza may cause more suffering for the hostages and even jeopardize their release after more than 500 days in captivity. Zahiro Shachar Moore is the nephew of an Israeli hostage killed in Hamas captivity.
Holding the humanitarian aid trucks from entering Gaza is also affecting our hostages. We know for a fact that the hunger in Gaza affects them directly. And we know from the people that came back and gave testimonials, our hostages are getting harsher treatment.
Hamas, Arab states, the United Nations, and human rights groups have condemned the Israeli blockage of aid shipments, accusing Israel of violating the ceasefire terms. The Arab League will hold an emergency summit this week to address the need for an end to the war between Israel and Hamas. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
And finally today, at least two are dead after a car rammed into a crowd at a carnival celebration in Mannheim, Germany. Reuters' Fiona Jones reports.
A car plowed into a crowd in German city Mannheim on Monday, killing at least two. The deadly incident overshadowed carnival celebrations in the region, where police had been on alert for attacks. Police spokesperson Stefan Wilhelm said several people were seriously injured. Police have detained the driver and said he acted alone, with no broader threat seen for the public. An eyewitness said people were lying on the ground at the scene and at least two people were being resuscitated, while local news site Mannheim 24 reported that a black car drove at high speed into a group of people travelling from the central Paradeplatz Square towards the city's landmark water tower. It was unclear whether the driver acted deliberately or if there was any connection to Germany's carnival celebrations. The annual event culminates on Rose Monday with a number of parades, although not in Mannheim. Security has been a key concern in Germany following a string of violent attacks in recent months. This includes deadly car rammings in Munich last month and Magdeburg in December, as well as a stabbing in Mannheim in May 2024.
That's Fiona Jones of Reuters reporting. And that'll wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Steve Karish. ¶¶